Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to New Breed Film Reviews. We are on episode 102. My name is Dave. We have Don back on the podcast.
Woo, woo. Yo, what's up, guys?
Smart guy's back. So it's just going to be Don and I, and we are going to talk about a movie that we both love. It's Oblivion, came out in 2013. It stars Tom Cruise, Morgan Freeman's in it, Olga Kurylenko. I hope I'm pronouncing it.
Good luck with pronouncing that.
Andrea Riseborough, Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. He's from Game of Thrones. And Melissa Leo's in it. And the premise goes like this. A veteran assigned to extract Earth's remaining resources begins to question what he knows about his mission and himself. And the ratings for it are, 7 on IMDb, 53% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 54% on Metacritic. Ouch. The movie's it deserves far better scores than that. I promise you. And I'm going to let Don take the mic and explain why this movie's great.
Wow, that's a broad opening. I think it's one of those things that I think we should start with how we brought this up, like a movie like Oblivion out of nowhere. I think it's a better segue, and maybe we were talking about it. Dave and I work together, by the way, and we bring up movies all the time.
Unfortunately,
one of the great movies that's been made lately that we really don't get to talk about that much or don't talk about that much is Oblivion. And it's so rare when you get quality sci-fi movies with subtext. And this just happens to be one of them. It's also well shot. The direction is phenomenal. Unfortunately, I don't know the body of work of the director. But we were actually talking about that. He took Kubrick's pioneering work in front projection technology and applied it to the movie. It looked great. The whole movie in general looked great. The storyline was fantastic, and it was all about questioning the beliefs that you're brought up with from the beginning. So, you go from there, and it's just a fantastic, fantastic, completely underrated movie.
Completely underrated, dude. 53% on Rotten Tomatoes and 54% on Metacritic. If you look at that without watching it, you're going to think it's a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I love Oblivion, dude. It's like, I'll throw it up there. If I have to go 1 through 10, I'll give it like a 8.5. Like, it's a fantastic movie to me. When you mentioned about the front projection, is that the term?
Yeah, that's, okay. Yeah.
I read that and I forgot about that. And we were talking about that, at work, and, when actors have something to interact with, like physically interact with and look at, it brings out a better performance for them. That's what I think, right? Anyway. So yeah, as opposed to like a stick, with a little
tennis
orb,
ball.
It's a dinosaur. Be scared.
Whoa. Hey, well, the thing is that when I was watching the extras the other night, the director brought up a good point. When you have stuff like the front projection, so they basically have, like the stage that they're working on for, and I can't remember the name in the movie, but the house that they live in the movie. Mm-hmm. By the way, there's going to be spoilers for this if you haven't seen it yet. So just be warned. But most you probably have, especially if you're watching this. So in the house that they're staying in, they lit the entire pretty much, 180 degrees of that set in mm-hmm. any direction with the background. That
Which
would be
amazing.
Stuff that they filmed from Hawaii and Iceland. So all that stuff the director was saying, which is great, reflects off surfaces. You can see it in the actor's eyes when they're looking back. It's not just something that, like you're saying, is a tennis ball. It's actually something that's interacting with the scene, which one, helps the actor's performance, which is always good. But two, it just gives more credence to the movie itself. It doesn't pull you out. You're not saying, oh, well, that's obviously CG. You lose it. This looks realistic. I swear to God, they live in a sky house 2,000 mm-hmm. feet up above the earth. Mm-hmm. Every time I watch it, I don't see the movie. I see them, those characters living in there. It's fantastic.
I could imagine too, like if you're an actor on set and you're going to do a scene and you're supposed to be in some kind of sky house and you physically see like clouds all around you, it must like inspire you. And, it has to generate a better performance. There's no way that it doesn't, as opposed to like green all around you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
And even the jet that he was flying around in, the bubble jet, was built in real life.
Yeah, they custom built that.
these things they don't do for movies a lot, really, especially sci-fi movies. Everything is CG because it's so much cheaper. These guys went and said, no, we want it practical. We want it in camera, which means it's in the real world. And then you get interaction. You get that same thing too. When that bubble jet is up on the house, the landing platform, and you have that front projection of the screen surrounding it with all the skylines and stuff, it's reflecting off the jet. You know, it's one of those things that, again, it just lends more to the depth of the film. And when you have sci-fi, you need that depth of realism. You don't want things just looking CGI, you know?
Yeah. So. I feel the same way about like puppetry and stuff and animatronics. I mean, I like a blend. I like when they mix CGI, like with like animatronics, like they did with Jurassic Park way back. That was like so groundbreaking, and it still kind of holds up to this day. I don't know how you feel, but I watched Jurassic Park and I'm not bothered by the effects too much.
So I tell you the Tyrannosaurus when he's stepping on the car and stuff, I still think it's real. They're just lying to us. I mean, that's how well it was shot. Yeah.
But dude, go ahead again. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, and there's only really 4 minutes, I think, of CGI in total of Jurassic Park, which shows you that it can be used just to enhance what's being shot practically.
Here's the problem, though, dude, and I may be wrong on this, but money-wise, I don't know what costs more to do CGI or do to like or do practical. Probably practical, like for the moldings for all the creatures and the
easily
robotics.
Easily practical.
And then hiring the salaries and, you know, so.
Well, not only that, too, the packaging, the shipping, the moving, the articulating. Mm-hmm. When you have something practical.
It takes more time.
You have to move it. You have to transport it. When you're on set, it has to be on a gimbal or something so to interact, whatever. So if you ever do get a chance, if you guys like this movie and you're watching it, go watch the extras and look how much freaking work they put into this. They had to build roads that weren't there in Iceland just to move all the set pieces out there so they could film. That's in-camera practical. That's people that care about film. Now, if you're talking CGI, you just have characters run through, you know, a fake New York City in a sound screen or a sound soundstage, sorry. And then they just post it all in after the movies, you know, once they're finishing it all up and editing, they just stick the stuff in the background. It's much cheaper and easier.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just going to check the budget compared to like what it made in the box office. Cause I was going to bring up a point. So the thing is like filmmakers and studios, like they're afraid to, because, dude, it's all about return. You know that. You and I both know that.
It's a business.
So, yeah, it's a business. So they're afraid to put all this effort into a movie and not get, you know, the money back that they put in. So they'd rather go the crappy route. So and it's sad because look at a movie like Oblivion. Like, you and I appreciate it, but we're not your average movie viewers. You know what I mean?
They don't even remember it, normal people. Like, normal people.
Dude, look at the ratings.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre,
that's
right?
That's sad. That is sad.
My hypothesis for this is, unfortunately, it's Tom Cruise. I think that's where a lot of the problem lies. I could be very wrong on this. Mm-hmm. I actually like him in it. I think he's fine.
Tom Cruise.
I've never had a problem with him. But unfortunately, I think him being in the public eye so much lately is hurting him in terms of like ticket sales. Yeah. And then people take that and they judge it against him. Not only that too, but you have a movie that is almost on the nose, a pro-atheistic movie, I shouldn't even say pro-atheistic, it's a pro-questioning your religious beliefs movie, which could also lead to a lot of the backlash, but I'm not sure if people really picked up on that or not, because that's one of those subtexts they're working on. It's kind of a subtext in the beginning. It's really subtext in the beginning. Actually, it's very down there. And then as the film goes on, it kind of reaches the surface level, I noticed, during my last viewing. And then right at the end, they're basically bring it right up to the surface, and they're like, here. This is your belief system being questioned, which is funny too, because Tom Cruise is such a hardcore Scientologist, but that could be something that affected the ratings.
Which we could get into that, but I don't know if we want to go there. But the budget for it was $120 million, and they made $286 million at the box office. So,
well, that's good.
They made their money back. It was a success, you know, but it's definitely a gamble. And the ratings were not that great. And it's kind of sad because they put so much effort into the movie. But going back to what you said with like the religious like undertones and stuff. Yeah, definitely. Dude, it was not just a dumb sci-fi action movie. Like, there was way more to the film. And it's funny because at the end of the movie, they just flat out throw it in your face because
She goes, I am your God.
Right, yeah. Right. So it's like they throw it in your face. It's like going against like authority, like God. So like in the first segment of the movie, they were obedient. They didn't question. You know, it's almost like control, I think that was what it's called, was like their master, like their God. And then little by little, Tom Cruise starts questioning things. And it's almost like a regular person questioning their faith and like, right. Yeah, the belief system. Yeah.
Because they even explicitly state in the movie too, that their memories are wiped. They're starting from a clean slate. And the only things that they have imbued upon them are what are told by them, by these aliens. So these aliens tell them everything from basically their birth. You know, I mean, they're obviously birthed at like at an adult age and they're clones. Mm-hmm. But from whence that point is, they're basically told, you need to report to us. And we're all knowing and all seeing. And when you're done with your mission,
yeah.
You get to go up to Valhalla or heaven or Allah or whatever it is. So you get to ascend into the heavens when you're done with your mission, which is, and it's funny too.
Parallels
it's also,
life, like religion.
Yeah. And it's also Adam and Eve too, as well. You know, guy and a girl starting off. Except there's many, many Adam and Eves.
Yeah. One thing that stood out in the movie to me, Don, was the sound, the sound effects for it. I thought they were like amazing.
Fantastic,
especially,
yeah.
Oh my God, dude. Like, especially
the little drones
for the drones. Yes. The like,
yeah,
I don't know,
then,
dude.
They take off
little things like that. Like, they stand out to me. And that was one of the first things I noticed. I said, wow, the sound, they did a bang up job on it. And, for the sound effects and it was like, I was like, wow. Cause it really, dude, the score and sound effects are a huge part of a movie. I don't know how you feel.
They're
about
massive. Oh no, I completely agree. You know, cause you can use stock sound effects. And a lot of times I think you'll get that kind of reaction where you go, okay. And then you don't think about it because maybe the director doesn't care enough or they don't want it to be a forefront in the movie or whatever. When those sounds go off, and if you've seen the movie, you know exactly what we're talking about. When you hear the sounds, you can tell that they were made just for that movie. They were like invented for these things, and they were thought out. At this point, it's going to do this when it's analyzing the situation. Mm-hmm. Right before it fires a gun, it's going to make this sound. And right before it launches, if you notice it makes a sound, then goes quiet and then launches. I mean, it's very, very well thought out and planned. But the score of the movie is fantastic. Yeah.
Oh my God, amazing, dude. Whatever tune it was when they were like swimming in the sky pool and like the score was amazing and the sound effects again. And the sound effects for the drones really brought them to life. It gave them a lot of character. They
you
were,
know,
like,
I noticed that.
Completely
I noticed
unique.
That the last time I watched it was they're really almost like very advanced dogs or very simple.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, they have a purpose. And they know what they're doing. It's kind of almost sentient, but not really. But it does give them a character.
It gives them character.
More than just an autonomous robot feeling. It gives them, like, you know, especially, you know, when the end, when they have their own, and he's trying to calm it down, and it's inside the restraints, and says, give it some space. And it's got the one all-seeing eye. And it also said, they also say that, too, in the movie, by the way, going back to the religious thing, they say the drones see everything. You know, kind of like, you know, God sees everything, or whatever the case would be. But yeah, what a fantastic, by the way, if we could, not to hijack the talk here, talk about the direction of the film, the blocking of the scenes. I know this is something you and I were talking about, and you were saying this isn't one of necessarily your strong points or something that you don't necessarily look at when you're watching a movie. Mm-hmm. For me, this is something I think I'm always analyzing, but I will say that a lot of times I pick up more on it on the second viewing when I'm allowed to take more stuff in because I'm not concentrating on what's happening with the characters too much. Mm-hmm. So I noticed there's this great old movie technique, and I just saw somebody exemplify it in a film review about the film Chinatown with Jack Nicholson, and how sometimes the directors
it.
Have you seen it? Sorry,
nope.
No, you should check it out. I need to rewatch it, but because I don't remember that much about it anymore. But there's some great scenes where the directors toy with you emotionally. You know, you want something to happen because they lead the characters right to it, and it's very close. And then they kind of pull away, and you go, wait, what the hell? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And then they go all through these motions to bring it back together. And if you notice, not to run on too long here, but when what is his name? Jack, and I forget what the Russian girl's name is. His wife's name? Oh, it escapes me right now. Julia, thank you.
yes, Julia.
When Jack and Julia are finally at their cabin by the waters, by the water's edge, and they're sitting there and they're talking, and you know, and they're this is where I wanted to be, yada yada yada, and you can tell, excuse me, this is leading up to the crescendo of a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the pacing and the pounding, and it's coming, and here it is, and it's very tight, and the director doesn't give it to you. He stops and he pulls the actress out of the camera. So you're just seeing Tom Cruise's face right when he's kind of like, wait, where are you going? We just had a moment. And you can see his confusion, which mimics the audience's confusion. And what they have her do is completely walk around the other side as the camera rotates around Tom Cruise, and they bring her back in from when she was on camera right to camera left to go in for the kiss. And that people, normal viewers don't understand why that is so awesome. A normal director, and you've seen this a million times. I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. You've seen this a million times, Dave, and you'll agree with this. There's a scene, two people are close. Oh, Dave, this is so great. I'm finally glad that we can start expressing emotions. And then they just go, boom, straight for the kiss, right? Mm-hmm. And then they're making out. Maybe it does some twirly camera bits, whatever. But there's no tease there. The director knows that you and I, the audience, want to see that kiss.
I got one for you.
What does he do? Hold on. So what does he do when you say, I want to see that kiss? He's bringing you right to the point where you almost get the kiss, and then he pulls her away. Camera rotates around, and he brings her back in. Camera left. When you're kind of confused, you don't realize what's going on, then bang, you get the big crescendo and the kiss, and there's a payoff there. And other directors just don't do that. Sorry. Anyhow, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, you reminded me of the scene in The Fifth Element when Bruce Willis went to kiss Lilu, and he's like moving in, and she just busted out a gun.
Yeah.
And she says something in some alien language. And that's
never again.
Yeah, that scene kind of throws you for a loop, too, because it looks like it kind of catches you off guard, because you think he's going to get the kiss, and she's just
like
busts out a gun.
And puts, yeah, I thought that was pretty clear. That's actually a good catch, yeah, that's right, because you think so. And you don't see it either. You actually hear the gun in The Fifth Element.
And
like
it comes
that.
In screen, if I remember.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's when he puts his hands up and he's like, you're right. Because any normal movie, really just a lot of standard movies, I should say, will just give you that kiss easily or whatever the case is, and they won't tease you for it. So the little extra work that the director does to pull the camera back, to have the actress walk around, to then pan over Tom Cruise, and then to bring him back together, all that work, was just to tease the audience, which is fantastic, which hardly anybody, I think,
and
honestly picks up on that.
It adds some realism to it, because come on, let's be real here. How often does it happen as easy in the movies? Like, you don't, it doesn't happen that easy. You get teased. Mm-hmm. They walk around in circles just like Oblivion.
Yep.
Damn it, they tease every time.
That's what I'm saying. And too, like, so if we're also going to talk about shot blocking as well, another thing that I don't want to forget is the scene when they start realizing they're not an effective team. Mm-hmm. And the droid, the drone that's underneath that he keeps working on. If you ever notice this too, they never get the shielding for that drone. And I'm thinking that every single house has a drone without shielding for that kind of backup. Mm-hmm. So just when the team fails, they can activate that as a kill switch. Clean.
Dude, there was one drone that was a menace throughout the movie. I forgot the number of the drone, but it was causing them problems like throughout the movie, and it was the drone. Remember when he was like flying? I know you just saw the movie, so your memory's like way fresher. But he was flying with Julia, and he had like three drones chasing him, and he went through like some lightning storm, if I recall,
right.
And it like fried them, and they were free falling. But there was one drone that was like on his butt, like throughout the whole chase, and it wound up like hitting him, like ramming him from the side.
Yeah.
And that same drone, there was one drone. I think it's that same one that like kept popping up throughout the movie. Eventually, it got destroyed, but it
I wouldn't
was like
be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the main antagonist.
It sounds like it'd be a good option for a director to do that, to kind of give a more character to something that's artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But if you notice. So where I was going initially with that is that when they activate, when she says, no, we're not an effective team, you know, and he's banging on the glass, begging her to get in the house because he wants to save his Eve, you know, that lady, the British lady, and he's banging on it. And she goes, no, we're not an effective team. And then the glass door opens and then they all are confused. Nobody knows what's going on. Audience is confused. What the hell? And then what they do is they activate that the drone that's sitting inside the house. and then it comes out, and the director does this great side scroll shot of it coming
through the curtains,
going through the curtains, and the curtains are on fire, which is a great symbology that the house is burning down, that everything is crumbling, that, you know, the world is falling apart. And then it just blows that British lady to bits. No remorse.
Yeah, dude, it turned her into confetti.
Yeah, human confetti.
Yeah.
Glowing embers.
I think the rating for it was a PG-13. Let me check on that if I could. I can't find it.
I would imagine it would be. All of his movies are always PG-13.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was PG-13. So they didn't show people getting blown to bits, but they showed enough where you piece it together that they just got disintegrated.
Well, it's a sci-fi movie, so they kind of have that luxury where they can hit somebody and basically just emulsify them, you know, like just completely obliterate them. And there's no blood or gore. But, and then what's interesting, too, is that so a few scenes later, Tom Cruise goes into another agent, Tech 52. Mm-hmm. So he goes into the radiation zone, goes to see Tech 52, who's just his clone, is the 52nd clone or whatever, that region. And as he's entering the house, kind of as his own, you know, he obviously had to take himself down. So he's kind of the enemy of this two group of him, you know, of Jack and the British lady. Now he's coming in as the enemy of them two. And he's actually coming through the curtains as a side scrolling shot. It's just, it's good extra work like that. It really, I mean, that's some of the stuff that I love about this movie that I just don't see in other movies being done, and especially good sci-fi movies, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome stuff. That extra work really, I mean, it comes through to those of us who are watching for it.
Dude, I love when a movie takes you out of, like, your own reality. And when I was watching Oblivion, I was really into the movie, especially when Jack, towards the end of the movie, when he had the bomb. It was a bomb, right? And him and Morgan Freeman kind of.
Correct.
Like,
yeah, they had a propulsion unit from one of the droids.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yep. So when he went to the Tet, the main, you know, base ship, I love the design of the Tet, and the music for it. It really, like, sucked you into that scene.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember. It was, like, ominous and, like, dark music. Dude, remember when the two drones were, like, dude, this is an intense scene, when they were, like, next to him on
yes.
the side, and they were beating his heartbeat and his
perspiration.
Yes, yep, they were analyzing him, and Sally is her name?
Sally, right.
Yeah, she said that, I don't know the exact words, but she was saying that she detected he was being deceptive in a way, because increase the heart rate and whatever. And, dude, that was intense, because there was a moment where both the drones kind of went, like, and they turned in on him, and they like armed the guns, and he was just about to get blown to pieces. And then he was like, oh no, what, I forgot how he got out of that
one. You know what he said? He goes, I need to do this for the preservation of our species, which it's a truth lie.
It's
type
a truthful
thing.
Statement. Right.
Yeah.
He tricked her. Yeah.
Yeah. But what's great too is when those robots, you'll remember this the next time you see it. Again, I'm much fresher on this, is the only reason.
Plus I got 4 hours of sleep. I'm fried.
Yeah. they turn in to look at him, and they're sitting there. And when she's asking him the questions, she goes, I detect increased perspiration or whatever it is. Can you tell me while you're there? And when she asks that question, at the same time, the robots go from just facing him to going up to the glass. So now they're doing that intimidating,
interrogation type thing. Yeah.
And so the robots poise above him and look down. And it's a very actually common movie technique where they put the antagonist up at a downward angle, looking at the protagonist, saying that we're dominant, whatever it is. And they kind of do that with those robots. They bring him in and look down upon him. They angle down, which kind of brings that, oh crap, he's going to get blown away here. And it was very actually, and you know, like movies like this potentially have to end like with a good ending. But at that point in the movie, you're not quite sure. They could just blow the shit out of him right there on the spot. Just, and that would be it, you know, and it could be going somewhere else entirely. So there's actually some pretty good tension all the way up until the end with the big reveal.
Now, let me ask you this. Did you honestly figure that Morgan Freeman was inside of the pod or whatever you want to call it?
All right, so I'm gonna preface that question with the fact that most of the time with most movies, I usually figure out just by my brain working, not like I'm trying to figure out. I don't want to think that I'm trying to always ruin movies for me. Usually, you know, with the first quarter of the movie, you're halfway through, especially like with Inception. I figured that out within the first 2 minutes of the film. That was kind of obvious though, but I'm not trying to, but no, I completely did not see that coming. And I think that's why I appreciate a movie is because it really, and I'm not just blowing this movie up just to do it. It pulled the rug out from under me. When he came out, I was like, no, he didn't. I was like, that's fake. Because, you know, she wakes up in the pod and you're like, wait, what's going on? But the pod's at the lake house. Morgan Freeman's in the thing. And then they blow the shit out of that Sally lady, which was just, I didn't see that coming. He ends up self-sacrificing. Morgan Freeman self-sacrifices. So you get kind of a happy ending, but you also get deaths that matter. They sacrifice themselves for the greater good. They died and they're not coming back in a sequel. Mm-hmm. That's important. That was a, that's how you end a movie.
Yeah, it was a cool climax, dude. And I didn't see it coming either. And when Morgan Freeman came out of like the little pod, the little chamber, he looked all beat up and old. he looked dead. He was like, but Sally's like, I forgot the dialogue between the two, but she says like, I am your God or something. He's like, fuck you, Sally. Yeah. And just detonates the bomb. Dude, that was an awesome ending, man. And then the wrap up, like it didn't end there, like actually had a happy ending.
That's right. Well, it also had like an art house ending. And this is kind of one of those things that I really, really, really like is that they didn't just have like a, she's at the field, she gets introduced to people or whatever it is. She's at the lake house. You know, it comes in, she's there, the kid's there, and then they show the back of Jack walking through the woods. You know, and it's playing this really, if you remember the score, it's very much the repetitive score throughout the movie, not in a bad way, in a good way. So it reminds you that something emotional is coming. And it's that very slow, you know, and they're going through the woods as he's coming out. And it's the reveal that it's the Tech 52 Jack that comes through. And, you know, she's basically saying, like, that's your father. But it didn't end with that. It ended with him saying, this is, I am Jack and this is who I am or something along those lines. But that, yeah, you're right. It's like a positive wrap up. It's how, it's a good way of making a good movie with a positive ending that wasn't just a cliched ending. Cliche movies are like the worst thing to happen to movies, honestly. So
right.
Yeah, not to ramble on about it, but that, I remember we were watching it last night, sitting down with the wife and the dogs. And when he goes, I am Jack and yada, yada, yada. And then it goes, boom, cuts to black, end, roll credits. I looked at her, I said, that's how you fucking end a movie. I mean, it's just, it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. Dude, what did you think about the story itself, like the premise? Did you think it was like a typical sci-fi story, or did you think, did it stand out to you as something like really unique?
Well, I do think it's unique because it stands out to me in that I like, anybody listening to this will start to pick up on the fact that I really like sci-fi movies that have an undercurrent or an alternative message. You know, Stanley Kubrick was great at double and triple narratives. And this is one of those special ones. So you can get a typical sci-fi movie, whether or not it's cliched is one thing, but it could just be a romp, fun ride, you know, where you're going through and there's, you know, lasers or whatever the case is. But then you have these good, very, it's odd to say this, but you have like an art house style sci-fi movie with an undercurrent, a tone, a double narrative that's made really well. So yeah, it's in the world of sci-fi, this is very unique. And I think that's why people like you and I have a problem with when we hear those low ratings and then people go, what movie? I don't even remember. Maybe I saw it, but I don't remember anything about it. And you go, how can you not? This was an art house movie that somehow got a big budget behind it that had all this great content and that is just completely underrated.
Dude, that's because the attention span of the mass public is it doesn't exist. Like they probably wanted to see like an action sci-fi adventure and Oblivion was, I mean, it had action, but it was like way more than that. It just wasn't some dumb sci-fi action movie. And
so you're saying you're saying the public is looking for cowboys and aliens,
right? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, they thought Oblivion was boring and it sucked because they have, you know, they're just dimwits. I mean, that's just how I feel about it, you know.
Well, let's just be honest. I mean, yeah, that's, you know, people call Stanley Kubrick movies boring, and I don't understand that at all. Or they call Tarantino movies boring and drawn out. And again, you know, you and me are the same way. I mean, nobody else can make that kind of dialogue, and it is super, super riveting. And it just wraps you up in that little tangled web and just holds you tight.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is too, dude, you just have to have like an open mind to different types of films. Like I'm the same guy. Like I like Pacific Rim. Pacific Rim is like
that's my guilty pleasure. Yeah,
Dude, that's one of my guilty pleasure movies. There's like hardly any substance to it. It's just a freaking giant robots versus giant robots versus monsters. Like that's it. It's core. It's just battling, and it's a popcorn fun movie. I can watch Hobo with a Shotgun, which is a freaking out there insane movie. If you've never seen it, check it out, dude. For kicks, it stars Rucker Hauer. That movie has like these two demon bounty hunters called the Plague. They're rock, dude. You have to see Hobo with a Shotgun. Trust me. But at the same time, I kind of appreciate like a really good, like, you know, acting film, or, you know, you can't just, stick with one genre, or like, you know, but again, it comes down to like the person. Like there's far dumber people out in the world. Not to sound like an a-hole, but, you know, so Britney Spears sold like what, 30 million, you know, albums. Like who's buying this? You know what I mean? Like, so, but,
it's honestly, you know, it's funny that you bring that up too, because I hear this a lot of times. So I listen to a lot of what people classify as experimental music or jazz. I listen to progressive music, stuff that's based on classical influences or, you know, extreme time signatures or whatever it is. And I love when I listen to my band's music, I love the entire album front to back. And a lot of them play like a movie where you have to listen beginning to end. You can't just jump in on one song. And I love when I hear people who listen to mainstream music and they go, oh, well, I liked like one or two songs off that whole album, but the other ones were kind of whatever. And it's like, it's that thing. It's like, yeah, that's because you're listening to garbage. You're not listening to people that are committed. You're listening to people who are just trying to pull money out of your pocket. That is it. I know my bands need to make money too, but they're really, really trying to make innovative and creative music that's different or that's at least technically difficult. Yeah, it's a good point when you bring up Britney Spears, to be honest.
Yeah. Speaking of music, dude, my favorite band of all time is Radiohead, and they have a new album that just came out, so I have to get that. I love Radiohead, dude. That's like my bucket list to go see them live. But there was one time they were playing in New York, and the tickets were like $300, and it was like kind of last minute for me that I found that. I was like, ooh. I was like, can't do that right now.
That's like Tool tickets, man. I tried to go see Tool. It's $120 a ticket or something, you know?
Yeah, that's insane. So what else did you enjoy about the film, dude? Like anything?
Not to be superficial, but I will say, you know, if you watch it and you don't want a sky pool at the end of the movie, you're not a human being. Not a human being with a sexy, smoking hot, like, British chick swimming through all naked.
Dude, somebody in the world has to have a sky pool.
A swimming pool.
Saudi oil, you know, tycoon or
with
Mayweather.
A clear bottom.
Maybe Mayweather,
man.
Floyd Mayweather.
Hey, you know, actually, you know, here's actually a great segue. So when we talk about good direction, I'm going to bring it back to the boring stuff again, because the pool is great, and that whole sequence where she gets up from, you know, at that scene, Tom had just gotten done, Tom Cruise's character, Jack. Mm-hmm. He had just gotten done, almost getting attacked by the scavs, right? Is that what they're called? The scavs?
Scabs.
So, and he goes with this line, he goes, well, I think they wanted me. And she goes, they can't have you. And that's when she goes into the pool and mm-hmm. she strips off all of her clothes, and then, you know, she brings him down and they're making out underwater. And the interesting thing that they did is that they then switched to him waking up, so you don't ever know if that actually happened or if it didn't. You know, and at what point did the dream become a dream? Or was it just that we're to infer that they did the act and then it's the next morning, but he has his clothes on when he wakes up?
See, I don't even remember that aspect of the film, dude, that he like woke up directly after that. I like to think that it really happened though. And
well, just look, because the only reason I say this is I'm pretty sure, 99.9% sure, he wakes up with a shirt on. If you watch when he's in the pool, he actually throws his shirt off, and the camera makes a note to show you the shirt hitting the side of the pool. It actually cuts to the shirt landing outside the pool. Mm-hmm. And then in the next scene, he wakes up, he's there fully clothed.
I'm sorry. Pretty- So are you saying that the sky pool doesn't exist, or they possibly didn't jump in it? Because I have to rewatch it and see if there is a sky pool like attached to the side of
it. There is a sky pool. I'm just saying that scene, I don't think that scene happened as it did, or if it did, we don't know. Because the good thing is it was just a trick done by the director that for those of us who pay really close attention to that shit, get really confused. Because we go, wait, what a minute? You know, we have to sit there and we have to think about it. And then you're allowed to just kind of, you know, kind of like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. It's whatever you make of it. He's allowing you. He says, oh, I threw this up. I tricked you. Now you get to make of it what you want. Dude, in a fun, playful way.
It's funny, off topic. Directly, shortly after Oblivion, Tom Cruise, he was on a little sci-fi role, dude. He came out with Edge of Tomorrow.
Yep.
And that was a fun movie, man. It wasn't as good as Oblivion and as deep. It definitely was more of like a, you know, an action sci-fi kind of thrill ride. It had an okay story to it, but I didn't find it bad.
No, it was a fine movie. I mean, you know, movies like Oblivion, I don't really need to lend a lot of credit to.
Oblivions,
because it's already so good. Movies like Day After Tomorrow, I have to kind of lend some, you get a little leeway with a movie like that because you go, well, I had some issues here and some issues here, and there was a little bit of fat on the movie there, but one of those things, again, we need more good sci-fi movies getting made, you know, quality. So I'll give it a little more leeway here and there, which is, you know, it's funny. I actually thought about this before we went on the podcast. Oblivion is so tight. It's so well done. I don't even have to give it any type of compensation type, you know, ideas when I think about the movie. It's so well done. There's really not much I would change about it, except for maybe casting Tom Cruise. But, you know, Day After Tomorrow was good. You know, it was decent. Definitely, like you said, didn't have the depth in the storytelling, but solid movie, you know, sci-fi movie. I watched it a few times.
Yeah, I'm a Tom Cruise fan. I like Tom Cruise, like personal life aside, and like his beliefs and his antics and stuff. And he does get a lot of hate because he just kind of became like a weird guy, like in a public's eye, you know what I mean? But as far as like a Hollywood like presence and like legend, I think, yeah, he's definitely like a legend to me, man. And he has some really good movies that are like straight acting, like The Firm is pretty good, Born on the 4th of July.
A few good men.
I mean, and then he's also starred in a bunch of like fun action movies, like the first Mission Impossible was awesome.
Best ever.
I don't know about the other ones. They were
John
okay.
Voight. Yeah.
Oh my God, dude, the first one was amazing to me. Like it was like a true blockbuster when I went to see it.
The first one was so good. I'm just gonna throw that in there. That is one of my all time favorites.
Dude, it's so smart, so well done. And how about that helicopter scene when it goes into the tunnel? Talk about intense. That was an intense scene.
I will say Tom Cruise's acting in the movie, especially the beginning, was kind of like, eh. I just rewatched it recently and I'm like, that's a little corny. It's a bit dry, but I still love the movie. It's a guilty pleasure. It's also really well done. The first time I saw it, I was still trying to figure it out. It was
smart. Yeah, it was well written, man. And then, you know, what happened to the Mission Impossible series is what happened to, and this is kind of a bad analogy, I guess. I think that's the word for it. But the Fast and Furious franchise, where the first one, it was okay. I'm not going to say it was as good as Mission Impossible, but the first one was tolerable, and then they just became like these cartoony, over-the-top, out-there movies.
I'm going to make your own analogy, but better. Die Hard. That's what you're going for.
Oh, my God, yes.
That's what you're going for. Yeah. First movie, fantastic. The other ones, he becomes Invincible Rubber Man. He can bounce off buildings from a helicopter fall. That's what you're going – not to correct you, but that's what you're shooting for.
The thing is with Die Hard – okay, Die Hard 1 and 2 are like interchangeable. They're almost the same movie because you have like a cop that just so happens to be in the middle of like this hijacking and all this crap. And it's the same thing as the building, the Nakatomi, I think that's what it's called. Building, whatever it is. You know, he's just visiting his ex-wife or his current wife that are having problems, and he happens to be this badass New York cop, and he's put into this situation, and you know, there happens to be a badass cop in the building, you know.
Yeah, he was just
So,
out walking his dog one
yeah.
day. This John McClane just seems to be like the most exciting cop in the world.
But dude, I can't lie. Die Hard 3 is kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, I love Sam Jackson's interaction with Bruce Willis. It was fun to me. I had a lot of funny moments. They had good chemistry.
And again, I think that comes from Sam Jackson though as well too, including him on the cast. He's always fun in there. But yeah, no, sorry, continue on. But yeah, I agree. Die Hard 3 is a guilty pleasure. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeremy Irons to me is a very underrated actor. He was a cool villain. But back to Mission Impossible, man. What happened with that movie and that franchise is the studios, they realized like how lucrative the franchise could be, and they just went overboard with it. They
They
just like,
pummel it.
let's one up, you know, let's one up it. You know, the next
Yeah.
one is like some crazier, you know, bigger stunts and
The problem is that they lose sight of what makes a good movie good. You know, the first one wasn't because he was invincible. That wasn't why it was so good. It was so good because he could have gotten hurt, but he was clever enough to figure out how not to. And there was real tension. I believe it was directed by Brian De Palma too, or
He's the one that
somebody.
did Scarface, I believe.
I'd have to
I
research
think.
that first before I say something, but I'm pretty sure Brian De Palma or some really good director directed the first Mission Impossible. I think that's where you get a lot of that tension, especially if you rewatch that scene where he's
Oh,
trying not to set off.
Brad Bird, not to cut you off.
Was it
Brad
Brad
Bird.
Bird?
Yeah, never heard of that guy. But good job, Brad Bird.
We all love it, man. We're talking about the first Mission Impossible, right?
Yes.
But I could have sworn it was De Palma. Maybe I'm thinking about another movie, but you know, the real tension in that scene where he's dropping from the ceiling, very famous scene, you know, and he's catching the sweat off his glasses as it barely falls, you know, almost falls to the ground, right into his glove. The new Mission Impossible movies, we just tried to watch one, that Rogue Nation or whatever the hell it was,
Yeah, it was
the one where
okay.
he's on the side of a jet, and it's almost too much. You're right, they're trying to one up. They lose sight of why it was so good. There was so much deceit in the first one. It was just clever. They killed Emilio Estevez with like stakes through the eye. I mean, you know, that kind of violence, you don't get that kind of that grittiness. I mean, I'm part joking, but you know what I mean though. The first one had that realism to it. The other ones, they lose that realism. Same as in Die Hard. You watch the new stuff, he just bounces off walls, you know?
Dude,
Where's the fun in that?
I stand corrected. Brad Bird directed Ghost Protocol, and Brian De
Oh.
Palma, he did in fact direct First
Yes.
Mission Impossible. You're right,
I
sir.
was gonna
You're
say,
right.
thank you. I'll take my film card back any day of the week.
Yes.
All right. Look, you have Google and I was still right.
Yeah, you were right, dude.
So that's okay. So to validate my point,
And he
yes.
did direct Scarface, so I was right too, huh? On the fly, buddy.
We give
Movie
ourselves pats on
nerds.
the back. There's like
Dude,
four
Brian De
people.
Palma actually directed quite a few awesome movies. The Untouchables,
It is
Carlito's
Brian De
Way.
Palma.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
He
definitely.
also did. Didn't he do? Who did that one boxing movie, Raging Bull?
That was Martin Scorsese.
Are you sure?
100%, dude. 100%. De Niro's my favorite actor. Scorsese did Casino, Goodfellas, Raging Bull, The Departed.
Oh,
Yeah,
I know you did the part of, yeah.
trust me, dude. Yeah.
So anyhow, to get back to it though, the reason Mission Impossible 1 was really good, I think, was a lot because Brian De Palma, you had the great script, you had the fact that Tom Cruise is actually potentially destroyed, you know, as a human being, he could be injured. The new stuff, it's all they're looking for is flash and stuff. It's the same as so to segue over too, it's just like the new Star Wars, not Star Wars, sorry, Star Trek that's coming out. It's like, oh great, they have a new Star Trek coming out. And you know, the other ones with J.J. Abrams were pretty cool. They're not totally lost from the Next Generation stuff, like the stuff that you and I like, you know, the real science-y oriented stuff. But the new one is kind of going along. It's a lot of action. There's not a lot of character stuff in the trailer when I was watching the trailer for it. And then it says on the screen, from the director who brought you The Fast and the Furious.
Oh God.
And that's
Oh
when
God.
my heart sank. I was like,
Dude.
that's why? Why would you do that?
Yeah, dude. Honestly, man, I really enjoyed the last two Star Trek installments, like the reboots.
They were fun.
Yeah, I thought they were good movies, man. I thought because Star Trek is synonymous with like being boring. Like a lot of people don't get it, and a lot of the movies, like the old school movies, like starring
Shatner.
Leonard Nimoy and Shatner,
Yeah.
yeah, they were like very. They had like political themes to them, and they weren't just like these action movies, you know, sci-fi action.
That's right.
But who directed the new ones? J.J. Abrams. He reinvented kind of like the franchise and kind of made them a little more action based, you know what I
Well,
mean? And
he definitely added some lens flares.
What else did J.J. Abrams just do? He
He
did
just did Star Wars as well,
Star
didn't he?
Wars. Star Wars. Duh.
I
I
can't
forget
believe you didn't
that.
remember that, and I did. You're the
Oh,
Star
dude,
Wars
I'm
guy.
telling you, man, things are not firing right today. 4 hours of sleep. We talked about that.
I'm surprised you're still awake.
Yeah. Oh my God, dude, I'm crashing right now. But yeah, he did Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and I loved what he did with that. It had the feel of the original three, you
Yeah.
know?
Yeah, that's I definitely won't disagree with you there. JJ, the only reason I watched the new Star Wars movie was because it was a JJ Abrams movie. And that's the only reason. I have very little invested in Star Wars. It's a very, to be quite frank, it's very vanilla. You know, it's very soft. We actually discussed this the other day as well, you and I off podcast, but there's no real violence associated. There's no nitty gritty. It's very soft and easy for pretty much the masses to kind of take in as an action storyline. And for that, I kind of sometimes get lost because it's a lot of implied violence. It's, you know, implied stress or whatever. And it's just kind of one of those things. Like, I get it. You got like a big group of people. It's very serialized, but, we sat down to watch the J.J. Abrams Star Wars. And I'll tell you what, from a non, fan perspective, just from a moviegoer perspective. And I've seen the other ones, the originals. I've seen a couple of the prequels, right? The really crappy ones.
Yeah,
I
one
wasn't
through
too impressed
three.
with them. And I didn't know what to expect from this, but I went in and I'll tell you what, when I was done, I actually had a really good time. I enjoyed it. I was invested into the storyline. I was hoping they were going to make it. Spoilers if you haven't seen it, you know, they killed Han Solo, which was, I think, fantastic. We have this discussion a lot of movies. There's a certain brand, starts with an M, ends with sounds like Arvel, that will not kill anybody ever in any movie, period, because God forbid they lose any money or fan base off of it, but there's no value. So in the Star Wars movie, there was actually value in it, and it's probably accredited to J.J. Abrams saying, nope, there needs to be drama, and to be drama, there has to be a death of somebody. You know, not to go too far off on that point, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah, dude, there has to be some danger of your favorite character dying or characters actually, you know, like real dire consequences, like
Right. Like the
people will
first
die.
Jurassic Park. When you watch the very first Jurassic Park, to this day, I still don't know if they're going to make it out or not alive. It's so well done. The new one with Chris Pratt, I mean, I could have sat back, I could have cared less if the characters died. I was honestly rooting for that one chick in the high heels. I was sitting here like, please get a velociraptor on her ass. Somebody fucking kill this girl.
Dude, I was
And
hating. Go ahead, go ahead.
no, I was just saying it just never happens. Nobody dies. Only tertiary characters die. And for the rest of the layman, that's characters that don't fucking matter die. Background characters that die. But continue. Sorry.
All like the Star Trek guys with the red shirts. It's like some
Exactly.
ongoing joke.
Yeah, the red shirt ensign.
Dude, I was like hating on Jurassic World when it was first announced and the whole premise, because I'm like, okay, basically this is Jurassic Park Part 3, you know, redone. Like that's all it is, because Part 3 was like this new badass dinosaur, and
Kids lost.
yeah, I mean it's almost the same premise. It was like, you know, okay, so this one is genetically enhanced and created, but it still was like this new badass dinosaur to like one up the T-Rex. It's like we've seen that already. But after watching a movie, I like Jurassic World. I actually own it. It was way better than part two and part three. I think they should wrap up the franchise. I don't really care to see another one, but they're going to have Jurassic World 2. You don't think they should wrap it up?
No, they should have stopped Jurassic Park.
Yeah, stop.
Once at Jurassic Park. Once Jurassic Park ended, they leave in the helicopter. End of fucking movie. But we've talked about this. Hollywood has a need to serialize because there's money in it. So because Jurassic World, no matter how bad it is, I still don't agree with you that it's a good movie. I hate that movie. It was just, it was piss poor storytelling all over the place. But they're going to make another one because it made, you know, $800 billion worldwide. So whether or not we want one to happen, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, and they won't stop it because people still go to see it.
Yeah. I enjoyed it from like, as far as, you know, like the nostalgia in the film, I really appreciated how they had all these little Easter eggs and nods to the first movie. And it was just a fun popcorn film. I went in with a good attitude. That's probably why I enjoyed it a lot more, you know. I was just like, I'm just going to have an open mind.
But, you know, even going in with a bad attitude could still be changed. I mean, yeah, I went true. In, I'm not going to say anything about the movie, but I'm not obviously a super, super big superhero fan. You know, like a lot of these superhero movies we watch, they're not that great. I honestly think the TV shows have done it better. The Daredevils and the Jessica Jones, way better than the Marvel movies that get put out. But we went to go see Captain America, the new one, Civil War. And Spider-Man was going to be in it, as everybody knows, because it shows in the trailer. And I was like, why Spider-Man? I don't want him in there. This is going to be stupid. He's always a bad character. The last few movies have been garbage. They don't need to include him. He's a weak character. And then we saw it, and it was actually one of the best parts of the movie. So you can be changed. Your opinion can be changed based on good storytelling, good direction, good acting.
Yeah,
just saying that out there. Like, I'll change my opinion if I go in and I say, "Damn, they proved me wrong." Awesome, mm-hmm. Good job.
Which is always awesome. Speaking of Civil War, for you people listening, we intend to do a full review on it with spoilers a little later on. Brian's gonna hop on here. I think Paul's gonna hop on, and we could all talk about that movie. And but I agree with you, Don. You said this. It's one of the better Marvel films, if not the best one. It was awesome.
Actually, we should tell this to the listeners, for whoever is listening. If you haven't seen it by now, go out and see it so you can listen to the podcast, only because from my standpoint, whatever value that holds, this is probably the most cohesive Marvel movie made, period, easily. And I'm not bragging about it. I'm not blowing smoke up its ass. There may still be problems that I have with the film. It's still the best movie they've made from a cinematic standpoint yet. You know, I mean, it's just, it was really, really well done. I have only maybe like two gripes with the movie, big gripes, not nitpicky gripes, just ones that like, all right, that was, you know, you can stop that now. All right, stop it. You know, like that type of deal, like 40 minutes in the movie. Okay, fucking stop now. But other than that, like it was really, 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 really well done. I mean, you can't. The Russos, the guys who directed it, man, they can't get paid.
I think Anthony
enough.
And Joe Russo. I think.
Yeah, they seriously should get a pay raise. Whatever, however many millions they're getting paid, they should get more, because that was a seriously done superhero movie.
Yeah, they did a bang up job, dude. I really enjoyed it. I thought the effects were top notch, and it was entertaining. I liked the acting. Robert Downey Jr. stood out to me as always. I would recommend it, man, for people to go. It's making a shitload of money, so it's a success.
You know, it's funny. It's just before we hopped on, I took a quick look up on Wikipedia or whatever. It's on par to make, like, I think it was $700 million for the weekend, or $600 million dollars. Yeah, so it's raking it in, and you know, you can complain all you want, but for me, when you talk about a fun popcorn, go see a movie, that to me is the quintessential guilty pleasure. Have fun. Just don't look for a lot subsurface. There is some, I think, maybe here and there, but not a lot, you know. So it's just one of those things. That's just a fun movie to go and see shit get blown up. And man, I'll tell you what, anybody who's watching this, just watch what the stunt team do, because man, they raised the bar in this movie. And I've seen, you know, John Wick, which it was only okay. You know,
I called it
the
John
Raid,
Wick.
All the, yeah, I kind of thought, honestly, I thought I was the only person that thought it was weak as well, too.
It was overrated, dude. It was okay. I'm not totally hating on it, but I didn't understand the whole hype behind it.
No, I didn't either. It was
Effects
terrible
are crappy
acting.
too.
Storyline was terrible. But so if you watch the beginning of Captain America Civil War, just take in what the stunt people are doing and realize that most of that is in camera. I mean, I saw some of the footage that people took camera shots of the stunt team doing their work, you know, in real time, like jumping off the side of buildings and shit and like getting thrown down holes.
I got a little secret, dude. I was Winter Soldier. You know, I was a stunt double.
You were?
So, yeah. Just,
wow.
So thanks, man. I really appreciate that. I don't know. I only broke two limbs during filming, but. You know.
It but, would dude, look that, like it too, because man, they must have gotten some big bruises from doing some of them stunts. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I'm surprised nobody got seriously injured on set.
Maybe they did. We got to do some research on it. But as far as like entertainment wise, and we're gonna get into this movie a few episodes down, but as far as the entertainment wise for the Marvel films, I personally rank Deadpool higher as far as like being entertained, only because Deadpool, the comedic aspect of the film, it was just funny and it had action. But as far as like overall, which one was better? Oh my God, it's so close, dude. I can't really pick one or the other. I'm gonna say probably Civil War was a better film overall. I would say Deadpool, but it's two different types of movies.
I was gonna say you kind of have to give it to Civil War, at least for a cinematic standpoint. Deadpool was great for what it was, and I paid to go see it because I want Hollywood to make more movies like that. I'm a big proponent of adult movies, as I call them, or going above PG-13 for everybody else, because too many times they marketed just for that certain demographic. And I know it's a business, but look, the rest of us in the world would pay. I'd pay, and I guarantee you would too. I'd pay double a normal movie ticket to go see a R-rated Marvel movie. Would you?
Yes.
Right? You know, yes. You could see like Tony Stark lobbing the head off somebody or whatever the case is, but make it gritty like some of the comic books were, you know, have a real dark subject matter. I would pay money to go see that. So for that, for Deadpool, you know, I definitely spent my money there just to make sure my voice was heard in that. But Deadpool just, it had so much more potential. I enjoyed it. And I'm going to buy the movie when it comes out because, again, I'm trying to support it. And I did like it, and I got quite a few laughs off of it. But, man, if it just had so much more potential. I felt like when I watched that movie, I was like, oh, if they would have just done this, if they would have – it could have really spiced up. If you've taken any Edgar Wright movie – we discussed this. You take any Edgar Wright movie, like Scott Pilgrim versus the World, Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead, and you take that director, Edgar Wright, and you put him at the helm of Deadpool, it would have made the movie – 10 times better, quantifiably better, easily.
Dude, the only issue, like I totally hear you on the rated R, you know, thing. The only problem is that it's kind of hard for them to do that with certain characters because they'll get so much backlash. Like Iron Man, you know, I think some of the Iron Man comics do have like darker themes to them because he's like an alcoholic and it has like some of the comics do have darker tones in them, but like Captain America is hard to make, you know, that like really gritty and like dark like that. Punisher's easy because it's a dark character. Deadpool, Spidey, they're more geared to like kids, you know. So I think they're having a lot of issues with that.
The movie is geared towards kids. Comic book never was, you know. I don't think so.
Like Spidey,
maybe Spider-Man because it was a 16-year-old boy at the time, but you know the comics are where people die. The movies, nobody dies. You know, they killed off Captain America. Let's not – I can't get into the spoiler talks then, but in the comic books, if you ever read the comic books, they kill off main people all the time, you know. And
they usually bring them back, though.
Sometimes, but it's one of those things, though, but they still do it. These movies never won't. They never will, sorry. So even if they bring them back, it's pointless or whatever the case is, but they, you know, death needs to matter. That's what I said long before we, you know, when we did that last podcast, death needs to matter. But if you watch The Daredevil or Jessica Jones, they talk about really screwed up family values and, you know, sociological issues, pathological issues, problems with like inferred rape. And abuse towards women in Jessica Jones or in Daredevil, you know, when Vincent D'Onofrio, he plays,
Kingpin.
Kingpin. when he was a kid, and they show his mother getting beat by a drunk father, whatever it is, and then the son having to go in there and kill his own father. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, that, and it wouldn't be that they have to release an R-rated Marvel movie, but if you go to a theater and you got, like, the kiddie PG-13, and then you got the director's cut R-rated or otherwise, they don't need to make it R, but just, like, you know, make it as real as you want to make it, you know, as gritty as you want to make it. I'll pay to go see that any day of the week.
Dude, speaking of the excitement, you know, of like death and stuff like in movies, cause it just adds something like depth to the movie. And it's like a real sense of like danger where you know that anybody could die or they will kill your favorite character. And the point that I forgot to make a little earlier was, dude, I don't know if you watched Game of Thrones,
no.
But no character is safe on Game of Thrones. Like you can have, dude, you can have a favorite character and you're like, oh, they're not going to die. They're too popular. And their head will get lopped off, like, and you'll just sit there in shock, like, did they really just die, like, brutally like that? And yes, they did. And the show does so well, I think, because of that, because you don't know, it's completely unpredictable, and you have to tune in to see what happens next. And The Walking Dead started off good, like, that way, and now it's to a point where Daryl's so popular, this is like mini spoilers for you guys listening, but Daryl's so popular, I mean, the chances of him getting killed off, it's not going to happen anytime soon. Rick, he's the main character, basically. He's not going to die. But you take a show like Game of Thrones, and I'm not spoiling it for you. Dude, you will have a main character, and they will die. So you have to get into that show, man. If you haven't seen an episode, it's amazing.
Which is why, you know, that's why I'm always a big proponent of Lost as well, too. And if Lost would have been on HBO, I feel it would have been similar to Game of Thrones is now. And I don't know Game of Thrones more, you know, particularly well. I do know that there's a lot of death. There's a lot of people dying. But that was, again, the same reason why I was a big fan of Lost. You know, they didn't necessarily make it a serial show. Mm-hmm. You know, a character dies, they're gone. That's it.
Gone. Yeah,
and that's what you want. You want
high stakes, baby.
But you know, there's a lot of unfortunately in movie making, like this business stuff that we're talking about. They just want that reoccurring income, so they're willing to keep on any character at any cost. They don't want to write them out for the simple fact that they want the money to keep rolling in. But Game of Thrones, which I'm not very fluent in, but it seems like they don't fall to that same problem.
Yeah, no, they don't, dude. And Game of Thrones, I may be wrong on this, but you know, they're based on, you know, books, the show is to a point where they caught up to the books, so it's completely unpredictable now. So people will like watch the show and be like, I know what's gonna happen, but they still will alter things. But now it's completely wide open. I highly recommend it, dude. I think you would really like it. You should get into Game of Thrones if you can. And for
we'll check it
listening,
out.
I don't know about you, dude, but I'm wiped out right now. I'm ready to wrap it up.
Well, I think we covered Oblivion and then some. So yeah. If you guys haven't seen Oblivion, go out and see it. Go buy it. If you have seen it, go out and see it and buy it. Just talk. Yeah, it's a great, great movie that's undeserved credit. You know, undue credit. They need more viewership. It's a quality movie that I am never tired of telling people about. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
What would you grade Oblivion? Because I do like letter grades, so Oblivion for me was an A.
I it's hard for me because I never grade movies. I never tell people like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, whatever it is, because I almost feel like that would be ruining me telling you all about it and the nuances and you going to see it yourself. If I were to give it a rating, yeah, for a sci-fi movie, absolutely. Yeah, I would probably say probably like a B plus or A. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's really high up there in my list. And it's, I mean, I'm not really sure what even value that would hold for like a rating B plus or A. It's really, really good. Simple fact, it's really good. You should go see it. Go watch it a few times. Pick up on the nuances of everything that's going on and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much it, you know?
I co-sign that.
Yeah.
I agree. Oblivion's an awesome movie. It's more deserving of a higher rating than like 54% Metacritic. Like, give me a break.
I will say, if you give it time, I would not be surprised. if in 10, 15, 20 years it becomes the Blade Runner or
Dude,
the 2001.
You see, that's how it is. Some movies are like misunderstood and completely shitted on, and only after time, like people, you know, they realize the genius of the film. You know what I mean? And it's a cult classic. And
I agree. If you look, when 2001 A Space Odyssey came out, the executives who saw the screening of it before it ever made it into theaters got up and walked out. They said, this is terrible. We don't understand what's going on. This is one of the worst movies we've ever seen. I can't believe we invested this much money into it. They released the film, and it completely flopped. Mm-hmm. Nobody went to go see it. They started pulling it out of theaters. And then slowly and slowly and slowly, by word of mouth, people were saying, no, you trust me, you, because the masses, I think, initially went to go see it. And then you had this swell of underground people who started seeing it and then built it up. And obviously, over time, 2001 has now made its way from completely panned by critics and forgotten, you know, to it's the worst movie ever. Now it's on the top 100 list of any movie list out there. It's always going to be up there. 2001 A Space Odyssey is always on the top list now because it's in cinema history, you know? That's one of those things. So give it time. I don't know if it's like 2001. It's nowhere near as great in my eyes as that film, Oblivion. But you give it 10 or 15 years and Oblivion will be up there with, like, you know, the Blade Runners and stuff, Alien.
It's one of my favorite films. But that's all I got, man, on Oblivion. We covered a lot. So, I guess that wraps up 102 for me. How about you?
I'm good.
All right. So, you listeners, thanks for the plays, subscriptions, the downloads. You can follow us on Twitter, Newbery Film Reviews. We have a Facebook page. You can email us, newberryfilmreviews2014@gmail.com, and subscribe on iTunes, rate us. We love feedback, whether good or bad. Just be truthful. It helps us improve the content on the podcast. And, Don, it was awesome, sir. Thanks for being
Thanks
on.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
I love being here.
We'll be back. We'll do it again with that Civil War review. So have a good one, guys.
Cheers, mate. Enjoy it.
Later.